Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here another week and spend time with you all. And, well, time's just going by so fast. And our technology, the world, everything's changing. I hope everybody out there is having peace. And in these days, it seems like we have to work on that daily. You know, it's especially in our industry, there's a lot happening and a lot happening at fire speed and lightning speed, I should say. And we have to be the ones who are kind of the pillars of strength and be calm and still get the job done while we're having lots coming at us from different directions in real estate. And I think our listeners who are the general public, buyers and sellers, you're going to appreciate this as well, not whichever business you're in. Today, we're going to talk about how we know referrals are the key, and these old-timers, like me who have been in over 33 years, we've gone through when we didn't have the internet. We didn't even have fax machines. We didn't have voicemail. Actually, we didn't have the MLS at first, and then that started coming through. So it's been a huge change, and you still need human connection. You still need people. And today, in today's day and age, it seems like what I'm noticing is a lot of leads can get lost. So it's really important to have a good system to pull in your leads, nurture your leads, track your leads, and repeat business is beautiful. When people come back and over again and they refer you to their friends and family, that's not gone away, even with technology. But how do you grab it and make sure things aren't falling through the cracks? Because now we have just it's just so much, and we have thousands of sites, not just hundreds, that are posting properties, and it can become very overwhelming. So in your systems, it's necessary to do this, and technology is so far ahead. And we've got today Michael Lamb. He's amazing. We are going to discuss leadership. I want to hear his story. I want you to hear his story because it's incredible and very inspiring, uplifting. And I think in our when we see people doing it, and then it gives us the drive to do it and to not quit, because a lot has been going on in our world in the last 5-10 years and always. So for those of you that are new, it's good. And then for the seasoned people, too, you'll appreciate this. Michael Lamb is the founder and CEO of Cato, Inc., a technology company providing agents on-demand reporting solutions that capture and qualify leads through automated texting. I don't know about you guys, but I know I love to be able to text now. And part of it is because I'm able to still, my staff will handle calls and handle emails, et cetera, but there's a lot of clients or people that need to reach you. And with texting, I'm able to, even if I'm in a meeting, not, I don't mean stopping all the time, text back quickly. But if I had to make a conversation with each person and it was 10 minutes, 20 minutes, I wouldn't be able to do it. So I actually love the texting. Now, the younger generation, I've had so many times where, and you probably can relate to this, where people will say to me, he didn't call back. I've called a couple times. She didn't call back. And you know they're younger, the millennials and younger. And, well, did you try texting them? And, no, we'll text them. And they text right back. It's just a completely different world, and it's in the automated texting is even going to be more exciting that we're going to get into today. So it's the fastest way to build and maintain relationships through the preferred channel of communication, texting. Now, Michael says that because he's this the new generation. I mean, he's amazing what he's done. I can't wait you to hear. Now, when you talk to somebody that's 60 or 70, they might go, oh, I don't want to text. But but we get them the text. And he's also the co-founder of Go Higher, where he built the award-winning international recruiting chatbot on Facebook Messenger. Go be the job bot. Bots are a whole other thing. Oh, my gosh, it's just amazing. At the 2017 Recruiting Innovation Service Awards, the bot received the most innovative social media solution award. In 2018, Go Higher was nominated for Recruiting Startup of the Year at Hiring Success 18. That is huge. And I think after today, you'll see why. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce Michael Lamb. How are you?
Hi, Natalie. I am super excited to get on the show and super blessed. Thank you for inviting me. Really excited here.
Oh, I'm so thrilled. And I know you've been quite busy.
Yes.
Personally and professionally, right?
Yes. And personally, after delivering my fourth child in 3 weeks, three weeks ago, it is my fourth girl in the family.
I love it. I love it. Congratulations. 3 weeks ago. Wow. Is your little one starting to sleep through the night? Probably not for a couple months, huh?
No, it's not. But it's actually not too bad because I work in the late evening, so it's actually the schedule is not so bad, just given how my team and time zones are all over the place in general. So it's not too bad. I guess I was ready for it.
tell me, how old are your four daughters?
So I got a 7-year-old girl, a 4-year-old girl, a 3-year-old girl, and my fourth one.
Wow! Congratulations.
They run the house. It's a jungle.
They have daddy wrapped around their finger at that.
Absolutely. I'm part of their daily routine since. You know, my local office is at my house as well. They like to come in my office and, you know, act like they're part of the company as well. And they will have their own drawing boards and mimic what I'm doing. It's pretty hilarious.
Oh, I love it.
So
they can play house, but with business, your business. And that, I love it. And you can, that's a good way to groom them. They'll know just what to do.
Well, we'll see, yeah. And we also homeschool. That's another thing. It's a little bit unusual with us. We also homeschool all of them.
So now you're outside of Silicon Valley, right, or in Silicon Valley?
No, I'm inside. I'm in Silicon Valley. I am in San Jose.
Wow.
And towards the bottom of it.
That's beautiful. With the homeschooling there, the homeschooling is so different now than years ago, and I hear that they have wonderful curriculums, and also you can get social activity for babies and children through the communities, right, with the homeschooling? Like, it's just a whole curriculum that's so different now.
It's much more. It's not. So when I first started considering homeschool, I had my own, you know, thoughts. And I thought, like everybody else, you know, is your child going to get socialized? Is this, like, really secluded? Turns out there are thousands of students just in San Jose that are homeschooling.
Wow.
And there's different organizations. There's actually charter schools that are built where you have to meet with professional teachers. They keep you accountable. You have to meet the standards. So it's just like having a regular public school, but they really hold the parents 100% accountable, teaching the kids. And then there's also programs that will help supplement the education. And actually, believe it or not, the government will help pay. Some schools will actually give you funds so you can spend the money for, you know, tutoring in math, English, history, go to field trips. Those things are actually paid by the government, which they reallocate to you, believe it or not. So when I'm taking my child to, let's say, the Exploratorium, that's actually paid by the government because we're part of a school district where they allocate the money.
You're kidding. So now, because homeschools have come way up, I would say they're really to par with the other schools. They get the same; they can get the funding that the public schools can get. I didn't know that. That's excellent.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Some schools give you that. Yeah. Well, I didn't know about that. When I realized that, I'm like, wow, I can actually now, you know, I can really focus on things that in my, you know, as a parent, what I feel most important and relevant in today's age. Because if you think about school,
right,
the way it's taught now and the way it's taught 40 years ago, it's practically the same. Everybody's going through a cookie cutter. And this is not to say anything negative about the public system. I went through it. I went through private school. I went to public school. I have nothing negative to say. But we live in a time where we have to adapt, just like technology, real estate, everything we do in business, we have to adapt. And if we're not educationally, if we're not adapting to the times, we're hurting our future. And as a parent, I see that. And I want to make sure I'm giving my child relevant teaching. And some things I don't believe
is
relevant.
You know, that's perfect. It's perfect because, you know, so much starts at home, right? The early education, how we, the value systems and everything. As parents, we have such, have such an effect on our children, and that's beautiful to be able to tie that all in and homeschool, but then still get the outside influence that's necessary for the social. Well, with you having four girls, I don't know if you need very much social, but you'll kind of have. But I'm just, you know, that's fantastic. That is just really, really exciting. It's just amazing what we can do these days. Tell us, Michael, you are so amazing in what you've done, and you're so young still.
Thank you.
You know, when you look at what people do. So tell us about your life. Like, how you got this to where you are today, and what really moved you to do what you've done in such a lightning speed way and a methodical way, though. So it looks like you've been very on purpose.
Yeah. So I'm going to say this, and I'll be real candid. I don't like to be politically correct or any of that nature. The thing about me
I believe in God.
And I believe all of this has originated from me believing in God and really asking God to guide me. And I'm a strong believer in that God will never give you anything you cannot handle. Even though you might be stressed, you have all of this stuff happening to you, you feel like you're going to break down. Something that always grounds me, knowing that God will never give me anything I can't handle. And early on, early as in, I would say early high school, ninth grade, I was very mature, and I wanted to start life early, and it turned out I found my wife in high school. She was actually my first girlfriend.
You're kidding. Oh, that's
turns
lucky.
Out later,
she was what?
To be my wife. She was my first
she
girlfriend.
She was whose girlfriend?
And my first girlfriend.
Oh, okay. I thought you said your friend's girlfriend. No. Okay.
No.
Good. Your first girlfriend.
She was my first girlfriend, and then, you know, she became my wife. You know, how you're asking me how this all started, you know, started with my wife, actually. She's the one that is the backbone to everything that I've done, and she's always pushing me and always giving me 100% confidence. You know, as parents, one of the best things you can do as a parent to a child is to give them unconditional love, but give them unconditional failures. Meaning, if you fail, knowing that your parents will always be there to support you, that does amazing things to the individual. And my wife does that to me. I would do these crazy ideas and tell her, should we do this? Should we invest in this and that? And she gives me 100% confidence saying, you know, I trust you, Mike. Let's do this. We're in it together.
Wow.
And if we fail, we'll learn from it and move on. And to me, that's the biggest gift I got from God, was this, just not having to feel like I'm walking on eggshells. And I am fortunate. I recognize that not everybody's in that position. So that starts with my wife. And how I got started into technology, it was stumbled upon. I was naturally good at math, and during the time in the year 2000, you know, computer science was like the degree to get. And I naturally just got that, but I was never a rock star. You know, I passed, put it that way, I passed college. I was never a 4.0 student. I'm never going to tell you I was a smart student, but I figured how to get by, and I figured the end goal was to get the degree, not to get a 4.0, but just to get the degree. That gave me gave me a chance to, you know, get in the door and get a job, and from there I knew that I would work my way up. So for going from college, getting my degree in computer science, I started investing in real estate for probably 3 years after I got married. So in my early 20s, late 20s, like 20, I think 25, 26 when I bought my first house. I knew that a lot of people love to find ways to get rich. And I knew early on that you can never get money fast. You can never those schemes, you always end up getting burned. But one thing I noticed about successful people, in people building wealth is always through real estate. And I, you know, I'm, I have friends and family, uncles and much older people in my family who were successful in real estate, and I saw that and I wanted that. So, you know, I bought my first property early on.
Were you in Silicon Valley then, or somewhere else?
Yes, I was. So I bought my first house in 2008, right when it crashed. But you know, I like to joke around to people that, you know, I wish I timed it, you know, but I didn't. I was looking for a home in 2007.
No, that's amazing. Wow.
Yeah, that was good. Because I remember early on, I had friends, I had people who did not have the money, but were buying $700,000 homes. And I say, how the hell did they buy that? And I tried to pull the loan, and they said, no, Mike, you can only afford $300,000. And that you couldn't compete and buy a home at that price in San Jose. Because at that time, it was cash buyers. People from foreign, especially China, Vietnam, different, they were coming in with $400,000, $500,000 cash, and it was very hard for me to compete. I just got lucky on one house, and the reason why, how we got that first property is we were playing a game of speed. We were the first to put an offer in. We gave a favorable term, and we put a 20% down. We gave up the FHA advantage of, you know, doing the your first house, getting a 5% down.
Right.
We knew that that wasn't going to get us our house because we were dealing with cash buyers, so we had to be aggressive. And so we gave our first house. We took us, I think, about 6-7 months to find our house. So we were searching 2007, late 2007. Finally got a home in 2008, bought the house. And it's interesting because my wife, she didn't want that house at all. She wanted, you know, and this is very interesting because now we're talking about real estate. Because one thing that these, you know, companies or technology real estate companies sometimes I feel do not understand is that real estate transactions are the biggest transactions you will have in your entire life. And you throw in the mix of two people, two personalities, it's an emotional roller coaster. And there is no AI technology that's going to be able to handle that component. A human needs to be able to handle those emotions, channel the energy in what's best for the both people.
Exactly.
So, you found
something in the 300,000 range in that time period because the market was turning, or what?
Yeah,
400,
okay, everything
you put the 20% down. Wow.
So all the homes in that area used to go for about 700,000 to 800,000. Okay, so the home that I bought was the when it was at its peak was, I think, about 750. So we bought it for about 400. Okay, so
you're
practically 50% off. And that house now is worth close to 900 now. Close to 900 right now. But that's because I never timed the market. And this is a thing that I like to tell people, because I've, you know, speaking at different engagements, even talking about real estate, people will ask me, hey, Mike, you know, how do you time the market? Because when I look at all of my past investments, it appears I did time it. It appears. I bought it in the best cycles of the times in the year.
But it was just perfect for you.
But
it was
I never timed it. It was just, whatever you can afford, and if you have a long-term strategy, it's always a great time to buy. Homes will always go up. Yes, they will dip, and yes, it can crash. But look what happened. People who bought homes that were $700,000 in 2007, they're worth $800,000, $900,000 now. We've already made all that money back. If you had a long-term strategy, you put in a fixed term and didn't be aggressive and made speculative bets, you would be fine. It's the people who took speculative bets and said, you know, I'll do an adjustable rate, I'll refinance a year later because the price will go up. But that's very speculative. If you don't understand that, then a lot of people got burned, unfortunately. And unfortunately, these bigger companies, banks, took advantage of people who did not really understand investments, unfortunately.
Exactly. No, it was a big mess. A lot of people went under, but it's still wise to get put your money in. You know, with the stocks and everything, they always say to not put all your eggs in one basket, but it's funny how many people will take their cash and put it in real estate, too, just to park their money sometimes, you know. It's, wow.
Well, they know it's...
That worked out beautifully
for you.
The reason
why, it was just, again, I attribute that to God. We could afford it at the time, and we got that first property, and then moving on, a couple of years later, we went in and did a flip, bought our second property, and this time we did an aggressive, we bought another home in San Jose, It was a two-bedroom, one bath. It was a 12,000 square foot lot. There was a lot of potential there. We decided to go in, gut the entire house, pull the electrical out. It had a basement attic, convert the attic into a bedroom, do a whole renovation. And you know what's really crazy? Another thing I learned, I made so many mistakes doing that first flip because it was
right.
It was the mentality of, I want to keep all this money. There's always two sides to the coins here. My wife is the one who's like, you know what, I want you, Mike, to do all the work. We want to keep all the money. So she ended up becoming a carpenter. So I ended up learning how to do electrical, roofing.
And that was not your love,
plumbing.
Right?
No, I hated it. I was like, man, I'm an engineer. I was making this much money. I could just outsource this and be done with it. But no, she's like, no, Mike, you're going to do it. And unfortunately, you know, she's the one that runs the family. So, I listen to her and I thank her every day. And I tell her, I said, because of you, I am so well rounded in real estate in terms of renovation. Doing pretty much a semi-pro, you know, I could do a lot of stuff. So we did that flip, took us a year, but we ended up flipping it and making about 40 grand on that property. And then we did that flip. We found out we were pregnant with our first child. So when we got that happened, we had to move that money somewhere else. And we decided, you know, invest it some other locations. And we took that profit, went to Sacramento, purchased a couple of properties there. And then a few years later, we had our second child. And again, you know, the rentals that we purchased, we made sure that we were always either break even. We were positioning ourselves knowing that in the long term, equity would grow.
Very smart.
We would be able to pull money out. If you're, you know, when you buy a home, I mean, there's different advantages of when people say you're building wealth in real estate. You know, you're not just buying a house and letting the equity grow and be done. That's just like a piece of the puzzle. Like when your equity grows, you have to take that equity and move it somewhere. You don't want to let it grow and let it grow and sit there because that doesn't become materialized. That equity can quickly go away. We've seen that in 2007.
So what do you do? Are you recommending an equity line or credit, or what do you recommend?
Yes, you can do things like you can do a refinance, cash out, take that money and put it into another property, and then roll that money out.
Okay.
So what I did in Sacramento is I actually pulled all my money that I invested because one of the properties, the appreciation was so high, I ended up taking all the money I put into the house plus more and took that and invested into another property. At the same time,
smart.
The rentals that were living in that place allowed me to not only break even but make money on rental. So not only was I making money as I was profiting off of the rental,
smart.
I took all the money that I put in, took that, went to another property, did something very similar, and I did the same thing in Sacramento, and then I took all that money and went back to Silicon Valley. And, you know, one thing about I like to think, you know, tell people is, you know, things we do in life always dictates our future. And it's, you know, if we really understand that, it's so important. You can't predict the future, but you should always try to prepare yourself for the opportunities. Knowing that I was really, really excited about real estate and having our second child, we knew that we bought our first house in an area that wasn't such a good school district. We also was
right.
already starting to dabble into homeschooling. So, you know, buying a home in a great school district wasn't a high priority, but we do know that
great.
Homes in a good school district appreciate very highly. So we decided,
right.
let's go ahead and invest in a rental in a very desirable school district in San Jose. So we took the money from our Sacramento property, equity we got from those. We decided to purchase a property in San Jose and invest it in as a rental. And, you know, many people would tell us, friends who are not investors would say, why would you? Because we decided, you know, when we bought that house in a very highly desirable school district, people was expecting that we would move into it because we just had a child and we're getting ready for our kids to go to school. I mean, it was like it was such a high in demand area, and we decided not to move in. And people are like, why? Why would you even buy a rental in the school district? And you're not even going to live in it. And, you know, people did not understand we were preparing for the future because what I was doing was basically investing in a highly desirable area. So we bought the house about, I'm going to say, around 600 grand. Okay. Now it's worth about 1.2 million.
That's fantastic.
In the home. But we purchased that because I was hedging my bet that I might not be able to homeschool my children. So if we bought that rental, we could always move in, do a homeschooling. If we end up failing, at least we can take them to a great school district. So that was the primary driver why I did that investment. And on top of everything, it appreciated in value and all these other things. But that's what the point I'm trying to make is, the things we do, we want to look at it from different angles. And I think because I have a computer science degree, a background, one of the things in computer science is you look at different possibilities. You're hedging all these scenarios and how to handle different scenarios. And in my investments, that's a lot what I do is look at, you know, if this fails, what do I do? Or if this scenario happens, what's the likelihood of all these scenarios happening? And how would I handle all of these scenarios? And that's essentially what happened. So doing that for about 10 years, got that. And then, I decided, it's time for me to do something on my own. And that's when I built out with a partner of mine, GoHire. How that started all about is, I started doing that business for the wrong reasons. I'll be honest. I did that because I thought I was going to make money doing that business. And unfortunately, that wasn't the case. Although we had a lot of great success with it, but my initial reason to do it was the wrong reason, which is to make money. And I wasn't, when it ended up happening is, we spent a good year building out this technology, not in the chatbot space. It's for those who don't know what chatbots are, the best way I describe that is it's an automated way of replying back to you in a conversation-like manner. If you speak to it speaks back to you, it responds back and forth, okay? And it's generally done in a texting environment, either SMS or either like Messenger, WeChat, Snapchat, just different messaging apps. But it's a system where, you speak to it and it replies back to you automatically. What we did at GoHire, we spent about a good year not doing that, just trying to, GoHire has a website called GoJobs. It was one of the first job
boards.
GoJobs.com. It's one of the first websites out there that had all the aggregates of jobs. So very similar to CareerBuilder.com or Indeed.com. GoJobs was one of the first. It was built 20 years ago. So my task to come in was really to revamp it, give it a facelift, really kick it into SEO overdrive, which we did. But we ended up finding that a lot of people were hitting the website, and the way we would get money is every time you did a job search and you clicked on a job, we would get paid for it. So every time people went on our website, we were getting thousands of people hitting our website. But the problem is people would land on the page and then would bounce, meaning they wouldn't move forward. They wouldn't do a job search.
And they wouldn't click on it?
They wouldn't click on it. They wouldn't do a search. They'll land on the page and wouldn't do anything. So we're like, okay, the analytical in us, we're like, let's do something else. Let's put a live chat on the website. People who land on our website and ask, how can we help them? So my co-founder, Jonathan Dort, him and I, we literally went to Mountain View Library, sat there, paid a bunch of money for Google to drive traffic to it, and we sat there and started interacting with people when it came on our site. We would introduce ourselves. I would say, hi, I'm Michael, a recruiting expert. How can I help you, right? And we started chatting. And after one after another, we would help people find jobs. And one common thread from this experience was that everybody, a majority of them, came through asking the same questions. They're like, when we asked them, how could we help you, they would reply, I'm looking for part-time jobs in Kansas City. Can you help me? And what we would do is
that
say,
makes sense.
Absolutely.
And then you've got templates, right? That makes sense.
Exactly, exactly. So you get templates. We would do the search ourselves on another website, on our same website, but do the search for them. Put in part time. Put in the city, Kansas, or the state, or whatever they were looking at. Maybe, and then we would take the link and paste it back into the chat window and say, here you go. We found, you know, 300 jobs. You can go ahead and narrow it down by zip code if you like. And they went on the way, clicked a few jobs, and we got paid for that. And then we realized, okay,
wow,
obviously this is great. This is great, but it's only two people, and we're getting thousands of people coming in. How do we automate this? Right.
Right. How do you scale it?
Exactly. And there's only two of us at the time. And it was during the time when Facebook announced that they've allowed businesses to integrate with their technology on Facebook Messenger to create bots, right? And again, what I said earlier, bots is a way to communicate back and forth automatically. So we're like, okay, knowing that there's like a billion people on Facebook Messenger, they're probably the most popular messaging apps, let's go ahead and build it out. So within, I'm going to say less than 2 months, I built out Gobi the Job Bot. But keep
that's
in great. Mind, I was working plus 16 hours. I was just hard coding and just getting this out the door. Because when you're not making money, you're living in the most expensive area in San Jose.
Right,
you're burning plus $10,000 a month in expenses. You're burning it
right.
quick, and you're doing everything you can to see some results. And
exactly.
I was already at it for a year. And I was like, okay, I got to do it. So my wife just let me be, and I'll just do it. So within less than 2 months, we built a prototype.
Wow.
And we released it in November during Thanksgiving. Now, when you do any type of product launch, generally you have like a PR. You kind of spice it up, get ready for it. We did it during Thanksgiving break, which is the time when everybody is not trying to do business, is just relaxing, having
right.
time, you know, fun with their family. And so it's the worst,
right.
what I'm saying, is the worst time to do a release. And we released it, and then what the bot does at a very high level is basically ask a few simple questions. You use the system, it will ask, you know, what kind of jobs you're looking for. Based on what you say, we would basically, what you said is a template, we would, you know, split it up and do the job search for them and send them all the jobs on Facebook Messenger in a carousel, like you swipe through left and right for jobs, and if you liked it, you just click on it, and it'll take you to a page with all the details of the job, and every time they clicked on it, we got paid for it. And we had other things.
So that was
like,
that's the company paid you for it, basically, right? And then you kind of set it up.
Yeah,
so you
yeah.
had to set up relationships with all these companies that wanted to hire?
Yeah, so we dealt with one specific aggregator. I don't think I won't disclose the name, but one aggregator
okay.
that allowed us to access not just U.S. jobs, but international jobs. So we were one of the first chatbots that was international and found jobs in different countries, like in Nam, in Australia,
wow.
Philippines. We had access to all of that. And so this bot was a bot that just interacted and allowed people to look for jobs. So when we did the release in November, literally the next day, I logged into my Facebook account, and I started getting these messages come in and out into our system. And I thought we had a virus. Because I thought, what
right.
the heck is going on?
Wow.
All of these messages, boom, 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 coming in. I'm like, what is going on? And we're getting people from Australia coming in, speaking to the bot. Then we had people from Vietnam. Then we had people from Philippines, UK, Africa, US. We're like, what
Congratulations.
Is happening here?
Man.
And so within 30 days, we were in over 100, I believe it was over 110 countries. We did over 100,000 messages the first month. We were on target to do over 300,000 messages the next month. We literally had to turn off traffic to some of the countries because some of the countries were producing so much traffic, our system couldn't even handle it. We weren't even anticipating that type of traffic. It was crazy.
That's fantastic.
Over the holidays.
That's amazing. And that was with Facebook Messenger? And then what you were doing, the bots?
Facebook
and
Messenger.
It took you all the way. Wow.
Yeah. And And then one of the things I'll share with people, what I like to share with engineers is the way we got it viral was, and then this speaks to just entrepreneurship. Like when you look at opportunities, you can read the instructions, but there's always other ways to have synergy. And the way Facebook Messenger instructions were is they basically showed you one path to share the bot experience. And when you, when I mean share it is, you know, if you like the experience, you can share it individually to people. You couldn't share it to your timeline. So if you had, let's say, 1,000 friends, if you wanted to share that experience with 1,000, you would have to click through every single one of them and share it. So that wasn't feasible or scalable.
Oh, that's the way they do it? Okay.
That's the way they did it. That's what they offered. That was their instructions, right? But knowing that Facebook Messenger bots lives on a Facebook business page, if you really understood that, then what you want to do is not share the bot itself. You share the Facebook business page. And there was a way to share that on your timeline. And that's what made us viral, because people were sharing on the timeline. All of their friends saw it, went to our business page, and we had a clear call to action, which is to get a job, send a message. And when they did that, they got into our system. We started interacting with them. And that's what made us viral.
That's fantastic. Do they still have that? Does Facebook still offer this?
Oh, absolutely. And for me, I'm just dumbfounded how people, you know, engineers are not leveraging that. Because as I go through and I like to play with other bots, they don't do that. They don't do that. I don't know why. It's not, you know, it's all kosher. I mean, what you're doing is you're sharing the business page. And I tell people, that's one way to help. If you have a great bot experience and you want people to share it, share the business page. That will help you exponentially get a bigger reach.
Let me ask you something, Michael. You know coding, so you actually got in and did your own coding, right? You didn't have to hire a coder?
Yes. No, we did it ourselves.
That's huge, though, to be able to get in and do it.
Yes. It is helpful to understand that, and that is, I am blessed with that, not going to lie. We did have our own engineering teams internationally. We had different teams, actually, at that time. But because this was closer to home, and
I you did it, and you understand that, too, if somebody's doing the right thing for you or not the right thing, you know, because that's a biggie right now in our world where we have Wow, so go ahead. I don't want to interrupt. This is so interesting.
sure, yeah. So we did that, and we won, you know, eventually we were competing. We entered into a competition in the HR industry for where all the job boards, I think there was like 20 plus job boards in the country competing. Some companies had $20+ million in funding. Some startups had a lot more money than we did. We didn't. We were fully bootstrapped, meaning we had no money invested. It was just me and my partner. We put in our own money, and we ended up winning the Most Innovative Social Media Solution Award, which is awesome. We were so proud. Thank you. We were so proud. Not just winning the award, but what's really interesting is that, you know, and this draws back to even what we're talking about in real estate, is that a lot of companies or a lot of people like to write about AI and how it's going to replace agents, how it's going to replace what we do, and then you have companies trying to use AI to do those things. And at that time, we knew that AI was making a tremendous strides, but we knew on a practicality standpoint, it wasn't feasible. It just wasn't practical the way the technology was set up. We couldn't apply it directly. It would make us fail a lot more. So instead, we just made it really simple. We made a bot very practical. We asked you specific questions. We guided you in the conversation, and we made it very clear. This bot was to help you find jobs. This bot is not going to answer all of your questions.
Right. So the human connection, because of the chat bot, you know, to do in the chat, made the difference, even though they say with AI we can, you know, you can look at templates, you can say we know everybody's going to ask these 10 questions pretty 9 times out of 10, right? So we can do a question and answer page. I mean, looking at it old-fashioned, but then say that it's answered through the bots. But that human connection still closed the deal pretty much, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. What we did is we addressed the need of everybody who do all the searching online, they don't like to call anyone, they don't like to email anyone, they like to be online first. And if you're able to satisfy their need very quickly, you're building that engagement and that relationship early on. And with a chatbot, you know, when you're looking for a job, no one's going to call a recruiter to look for jobs. They're going to go online and search. And if you have it on your Facebook Messenger, and if you're already on Facebook, it just made it really easy to look for jobs versus going to a website, searching. This one is
right.
You go to the chatbot. It knew you by your first name already. It had a relationship with you. It would remember all your job searches. You can
Fantastic.
Save it. You can have alerts. When new jobs came on board, you'll get a push notification saying, hey, Mike, we found 300 more jobs in your area specifically for software engineering, right? So we would make it personalized. And our conversation had a personality to it. It wasn't robotic. We had emojis. We had, ways how you and I would speak with emotions. We use emojis to express those emotions in the conversation.
Oh, that's
and that
perfect.
Made it more alive. Yeah.
Right. Oh, I love it. The synergy nowadays is making a big difference in having the personality and having the engagement, right? People are learning with engaging, but then yet everybody wants everything quickly, and that's just brilliant. So what did you tell me? Tell us what you did with it. Can they still do it?
So I decided to leave the company about 6 months afterwards. I ended up getting, one, burned out, two, realizing that I'm not passionate in HR. I wanted to do something more in real estate. I either wanted to go back to flipping properties or do something in technology. And I did something early on where I had an idea where, you know, I thought of, I'm kind of going all over the place here, but, you know, FICO scores.
No, you're great.
Credit scores.
You're what?
FICO scores,
you're what?
Credit scores, right. None of us really understand how you can get an 800. We get basic ideas what you need to do, but no one really understands that numerical value. It's just comes
to go
with
from
trust
700 to 800. Kind of.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Because a lot of people end up in the like 700s, right?
Yeah. But it's just like common trust in all the companies doing business. If you have a specific score, I'm going to do business with you. That's it. That score is trustworthy. And I thought, well, why don't we do something in real estate where everybody's search parameters is very unique, and every time I'm looking for properties, I do the exact same thing. I confirm, is it a three-bedroom? Is it two bath? Is it single story? Is it in this? So I even though I've set the parameters that way, I still naturally will verify that information. And then, like, it would have to meet all my parameters before I would dig further. Why couldn't there be what I called a home true score tailored towards each individual search preference so that every time they did a search, they will rank every property for you from 1 to 10. And the 10 is the ones that meets all your criteria. You don't have to confirm it. It's already done for you so that you can quickly access that property, evaluate
right,
it.
That's
and this
great.
Makes you faster to deliver. So I did that part-time when I had a regular job, and I built it out, and so many things I did wrong. Because I tried to do it myself. I tried to did it half part-time, and you can't do that. To do this entrepreneurship stuff, you got to do it full-time. Just like realtors. Like realtors, if they do half, part-time, they're not going to be successful
right.
as someone who does it full-time. That's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I decided, so that was one idea, and I always had that on the back of my mind. It's like, I want to do something like that or go back into real estate technology. And then how I stumbled upon going from Go Hire to Cato was I was considering selling one of my properties. So as what most consumers will do is they will go online, they will go to Zillow, they will look at what their home is worth. Let's be honest. I know realtors don't like that, but you have to embrace the elephant in the room. Okay, Zillow has dominated the market. They made it really easy to give a number, whether it's accurate or not, and I know they can be far off as 20% off. But the consumers, they don't care. They don't care. They just say, hey, my home is worth $900,000. All right. I feel good. And then the next step is they want to verify that number. So they'll go to a realtor's website. They'll look at what my home is worth. Want to get a report back. Oh, they'll call. Most of the time, they're not going to call. Most of the time, they'll go on a website. And that's what I did. I went to realtor.com and I went to multiple realtors website and I went to one of their tabs to say, what is my home worth? Put in your address and then get that information. turns out I did that, and it was crazy. It was a crazy experience because it was not what I expected. I would fill in my form. It was like I had to fill in like at least 7 fields, put in my information, put in my house. I would get like a text message asking me to rank my house. I thought I was speaking to someone, so I said, "Yeah, my house is ranked at 10, and they never responded. Like nothing happened after that text message.
Very frustrating.
I thought that was
huh?
unusual. Very frustrating because they asked me a question. I responded, and I got nothing back. So I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to let that go by. I get an email within that time frame asking the exact same question. So I responded the exact same way. I got no reply back. I said, what? Okay. And then a couple of days later, I get a phone call asking me to verify I want to sell my house. Is that the right address? And after I've confirmed verbally, they said they're going to give me a report a couple of days later. And I was like, wait a minute here.
That's terrible.
We're in the 21st century. Why am I having to wait like 5 days to get a simple report on what my home is worth when I could go to Zillow and get it instantly? Like, you guys got to be kidding me, right? And they're like, oh, I'm sorry, this is just how we work. And I was like, my God, okay, maybe it was because of that group. I went to another website. I filled in my information. It didn't even work. It broke. The link broke. I went to another website.
Oh,
it was
no.
Like, consistently. I was like, okay, there is a problem here because as a realtor, if you're targeting homeowners, your biggest tangible asset is your customized CMA comparables, right? That's what makes it really
right.
personalized. Why couldn't you build something out very quickly? And that's how it spawned Cato, because we provide instant on-demand CMAs and property reports all through automated texting. So we made it so that you can have a postcard and you can give people, you know, the traditional way of even doing flyers is the only way for me to contact you is I'm going to have to call you or email you. Well, we do know that most people would rather text, not call, so they're not going to call you. Email, I'm sorry, email has a lot of spam these days. My phone has over 14,000 unread emails. They're spam. So good luck trying to reach me directly there. But texting?
Oh, I get it. I'll get 100,000. I mean, I get 1,000 a day, and it's such a nightmare. Yep, I know.
Yeah, so we realized, you know, let's do texting.
Perfect.
And when, so when we did texting.
Then you're pulling the data, though. You're pulling the data from all 50 states, pretty much.
Yeah, so we partner up with a vendor. We have access to pretty much all of the MLS data. So whatever address you put in, we're able to run comps, pull in all the accurate sales data. We'll pull it in a report. We will even compare it to Zillow estimates for you, because what agents love to see is you'll be surprised, or maybe you won't be surprised. As a realtor, experienced realtor, you won't be surprised. But to a consumer, you will be surprised how far off Zillow can be off. Because they'll show
what we
sold for and what Zillow says. We got feedback from consumers shocked because they've never seen it at that level. They just assume Zillow's accurate. But when you show what was sold, what Zillow says is worth, they'll be surprised. Like we just saw a home that was sold for $1.6 million, but Zillow says it's worth $1.2 million. Like, what the heck?
Right.
But
no,
it's sold for $1.6
all the time.
So.
All the time we see it. I was surprised that they didn't get their statistics. They were so skewed. I was surprised that they had, with all the money and funding they have, I thought they would get it to be more accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. So when we built that out, we built that technology. We made it so that now we're even making it so that the way you do open houses, we're changing how people do open houses, because now from a realtor's perspective, when you do an open house, what do? You generally have a flyer, right? And the flyer, what does it contain? It contains your contact, has all the photos of that house. But think about it. You're going to go walk in the house. You're going to see the rooms already. You're going to see everything. So you're showing the photos that they've already physically seen. You're not really giving them a tangible asset. So what we're telling agents to do now with our platform is do not do flyers. Instead, we provide postcards or designs for them. And we tell them, have a postcard, and the postcard clear to action is, do you want to buy or sell? Text in CMA to this local number. And that local number is tied to the realtor. And so what that does is when people walk in and they say, hey, Jerry, I don't have a flyer. Can I see the photo? You know, can I get details of this house? The realtor will say, we don't do flyers. The best way to get this detail is go ahead and text in and you'll get the property report all on your phone instantly. And when they do that, we instantly capture their mobile number, their name, and their address. And the power
does the name and address come in automatically because of the just from the system? They don't have to type it in, right?
No, no, they will have to type it in. We instantly get the name,
okay.
I mean the number, and then we will introduce ourselves when we ask them, you know, what is your name. Majority of the time, they will put in their name, and then if they want the report, well, they have to put in the address or the MLS number. And when they do that, we give them the report. We got the contact information. An instant notification goes to the realtor. And not only do you get that information, which is legit, the phone number is real, what people can do, okay, this is going really advanced here, but you're talking about really putting this on steroids. You take that number, you can actually upload it into Facebook, create a custom audience, and map that number to the Facebook account of that user so you can create targeted ads.
Really?
And what that does now is this person has saw your brand. Now you're giving them targeted ads on Facebook, which everybody has Facebook, everybody's on. Now you're really applying the rule of seven in marketing. It takes about 7 touches, 7 viewings before they remember your brand. So they go to your open house,
right.
They did a texting, they saw your brand, now they see you on Facebook. You're just leveraging that fact. So when people realize that you can do this with a number, that lead becomes so much more valuable than an email. Yeah.
Absolutely, that's amazing.
And people
Brilliant.
Get leads easily by just going to open houses and texting in to get property report. And the realtor, they get the lead. It's great for them. And
I love it. So
way.
They go to
Kado.
Is it Kado.com? Where do they go to sign up?
Oh, they can go to TechCMA.com. That's our landing page. So
TechCMA.com.
Just go there.
Okay.
You can sign up. And again, we don't do any contracts. We don't do any long-term signage. So we make it really easy. You can sign up, cancel anytime. We don't believe in holding you down. Top producing agents and teams, they see the tremendous value in this, and they end up sticking with us long-term. They don't care. Like, this is like a drop in a bucket for them. Because people are spending,
it's perfect.
On,
it's excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, When they can take the text number and put it in Facebook and then do like it's not like geo-tracking. It's more like if they're what they're interested in, right, that area, that location. I guess that does – it's kind of like it's not an algorithm, but it's kind of like, you know, when you buy something and then all of a sudden you start seeing ads because you bought something and it picks up what you like. So with this, when you put it into Facebook and then you're doing targeted ads, can you do that in other venues with the texting too?
Oh, absolutely. You can take that and do the same thing on Google AdWords. So in Google, it's even more powerful. Well, I don't know if more powerful, but it's like a bigger reach. What you can do is you can put it on Google so that when you're on searching on Google, you get these ads. They will be able to follow the person wherever they go on their phone, on the computer, and be able to give those ads to them. So when you take this number, you can match them to Facebook.
Really? So you know how we have like the do not call list now with a registry, and it's kind of a pain, especially when they exclude politicians, but they don't exclude salespeople and entrepreneurs. You know, I mean, and we all still we're constantly getting called with solicitation anyhow. But so with the texting, there's not that type of situation where that we have to worry about a do not call list, or because we're going through Facebook and Google and we can do that through targeted ads. I'm just trying to make sure I'm understanding that piece of it.
Yeah, so the do not call list is where those telemarketers who get to buy these numbers or they want to call and solicit the service. We don't do that because
But we have permission because you've gotten their phone number initially?
Yes, when you text in, by the consumer texting in, they are implicitly already given permission for that person to text back, right, that business to text back.
Okay.
But we even go further.
Okay.
We do a double opt-in. So when you text in, we explicitly say, reply yes to continue using our services. We don't spam, you know, data rates apply, and we double opt in. So we make us even more ironclad, so to speak, to be compliant.
I love it. That's great. That's fantastic. So I love it. No, I love it. Go ahead. Oh my gosh, we only have about 5 minutes left. Can you believe it? I'm looking at the board and going, Where did the time go? You've been, career is so great. This is Michael Lamb again with us, and this is Natalie Mullenix on Realty Universal Radio. And to get more information about this, of course, everybody that knows us knows they can go to realtyuniversal.com, and we'll put you in touch. Michael, it's just amazing. You've got the it's techcma.com if you want to sign up for this. But go ahead. We've only got a few minutes left. This is just, how did it fly by so fast? Whoa.
I know. Like I said, I could talk forever. Talk about family, talk about entrepreneurship, wealth building.
Oh, I love it.
I'm
going to ask you, can we switch over? Because
again,
we literally have 4.5 minutes, which I hate to do that. It just goes by fast. It's like, and then can we go on about leadership, like a lot of people have ideas. A lot of people are creative. A lot of people say, I want to put this together. I want to do this. And then you see people like, say, for example, Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg went and got, I read, I don't know if this is correct, though, like 500,000 and then started Facebook going, and look at it today. I don't know. I'm sure much more money was put in later, but I'm just saying initially. You've got the floor for the next 4 minutes. On a leadership side, where would you suggest people that want to go and do startups, or they want to do something, do they always have to go get funding, or can they bootstrap it? What are your suggestions with your leadership skills? Because you've been very good at taking taking it to fruition, what you decide to do. It's not like, you know, and of course we all make mistakes at times and learn different lessons that way. But if you can elaborate a little bit on that, that would appreciate it.
Right, right. Oh, man, 4 minutes. Okay, so this question is very, it's a great question, and it's a question that I even asked myself early on. I have colleagues asking me. They have great ideas. I'm going to say this really bluntly. You know, everybody has great ideas. It's not about the idea. It's the execution. The hardest part in any type of endeavor you do is actually holding yourself accountable and executing it. When I say executing it, is what are you doing to put yourself in position to do X, Y, Z? Now, you may not have the skill. And like I said earlier in this conversation, I'm not the smartest engineer. If I speak to an engineer, I'm the dumbest. I'm going to tell you straight up, I'm the dumbest. I'm not smart. However, I know how to put the pieces together. I see the vision. And as anyone who's trying to leapfrog and jump into the entrepreneurship, I congratulate you, embrace you. But do understand, the hardest part is not the idea. So the biggest mistake I see people do is they say, I have this great idea. I'm not sure if I should tell you about this. You know what? When you have that mindset and you say that, I'm not sure if I should share this with you, you end up hurting your opportunities, because that person might be the person that can take you to the next level. So
exactly.
I tell people, look, if you have a great idea, share with everybody you want. Share it and see who can help you. Look for help. Don't do this by yourself. That was my biggest mistake early on my first adventure, is try to do everything myself. And I learned it the hard way, because you end up failing. Speaking to other entrepreneurs, they all have told me, you need to find someone to help you. You need to find someone in business. If you're not technically strong, you know, work, you know, educate yourself. Like, you as an entrepreneur, you cannot also depend on other people. So what I mean by that is, you should really, you know, be involved in all aspects of it, you know, engineering, software development, design, learn everything so that you can have an intelligent conversation to people when you're trying to hire a software engineer to do your work. I've seen so many people who hired engineers and they burned them because they didn't understand how to put in the specs or didn't understand how to convey their thoughts, and the engineer just did what they thought it did, and they ended up burning thousands of dollars. And another thing is, if you have an idea, test it out first. Test it out. So what I mean by that is, don't build a product yet. What you could do is, you could build a mock-up, and you can spend thousands of dollars, less than thousands, even hundreds, and test it out and really see if people would buy that product. I mean, you could easily, if you have this great idea, let's say you have an app, and you think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Okay, go ahead and spend a few $100s. Go ahead and market it. Create your landing page. This website's out there that does that for you, and see what people pay for it. When people decide to pay for it, you know you have an idea. If no one pays for it, well,
test market.
You're going to have to work harder. You're going to have to see it. So instead of putting in thousands of dollars into a product that you think someone might like, test it out right away. And that's exactly how Cato started out. you know, we built a product fairly quickly, and we decided to charge people because the idea sounds great, but then would you give me your money? And when we did that, people hands down get, you know, signed up. They're like, this is, don't even ask me. I would be more than happy to pay for this.
Right.
This is just, the value is tremendous. But going back to people who are thinking about doing their own business, is test it out fast, build out a mock. You can hire engineers to do that. And you, it's like a fifth the price of what you would invest in if you were to try to build out. And I tell this to friends, family, anyone who's doing entrepreneurship, I tell them, test it out first. See if someone's willing to pay. When they give you money, you know you got something. Because giving money away and paying for something is not so easy. So if you can do that and you get many people doing that, then you got yourself a great idea. And then you start surrounding yourself. You go to these meetups. We live in a time and age where you can find people, you can meet people, socialize. And by the way, that is so important in entrepreneurship. It's yes, I know, especially for engineers, I'll speak to them directly. You can be an engineer and not be social. You have to be social, interact with people so you can network.
Network, like
you
have to.
You've got to network
to
with people.
Skill.
Once you network,
you have
you
to
start
like
finding people.
People
Yeah, and you just got to find how people can interact with you. And don't be greedy. You know, there's so much wealth out there. Don't try to hold everything, keep everything for yourself. You know, I've seen people who are not willing to share the idea or not willing to partner up because they don't want to split the pie. I'm like, that's so narrow-minded. You got to look at the bigger picture.
Right.
You know, do you want,
right, exactly.
You know, you want, I mean, at the end of the day, it's never about the money, too. That's the thing I people have to understand. Don't do it
right,
for the money.
The
money will always
follow. And then you can get your... It does follow you, and it comes to you, and then you can get the done. And faith in God and working on a mission makes a huge difference, doesn't it? Oh, my gosh, Michael, we're at the end, and the recording's going to stop, so that's why I'm going to go ahead and I want to have you back again, too, and we'll be doing lots of work with the agents and brokers. I am looking so forward to it. I love your energy. And
thank you.
Gosh, but we'll have you back, and if you want to just say one last sentence, but I'm not sure if it'll still record, and I'm going to tell everybody out there to I wish you peace, my ending, but if you want to just say one more thing, and we'll go and sign off.
So the thing I'll say is everything we do in life, it's all about engagement and the relationships we build. I follow a policy, ABR, always building relationships. I don't do ABC, always be closing.
I love it. ABR. Relationships are key. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Michael. We're going to have you back. And to everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to realtyuniversal.com. Make it a great day.